Hey, this is BJ. Thanks for listening to our show's podcast. If you're a fan of all things geeky, you should check out my other podcast, BJ Shea's Geek Nation. We have new episodes every day, and you can check it out at bjgeeknation.com.
Your driver's license is important so you can get back and forth to work, get your kids to school, and back and forth to daycare. If your license has been suspended because you can't pay your tickets, you can't do any of those things. Let's talk about Chapter 13 bankruptcy. You may have heard that tickets cannot be discharged, but they can be dealt with in a Chapter 13 case. Why not come in for a free consultation? The chapter you choose will make all the difference to your getting back, legally, on the road. Let's design a plan to pay off your tickets and restore your license immediately. I'm Attorney Travis Gagne. Please contact me today at ChooseTheRightChapter.com. That's ChooseTheRightChapter.com.
99.9 KISW, The Rock of Seattle. So the most streamed song of the 20th century, with 1.6 billion streams. So this is a 20th century song that has been streamed the most.
So basically it'd be like a classic rock song, I'm thinking.
You're right.
At this point, anything that was out before the 2000s, I mean, people view Alice in Chains as classic rock, which is nuts to me, but it is.
Oh, dude, I know. Well, anything that's over 20 years old has got to be considered classic rock now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, of course, a lot of folks will read some of these stories to get them ready for us. Does anybody not know the answer?
I do.
I know.
Yes.
Oh, y'all know?
Yeah.
Oh, look at you guys. I'm looking at it and I still don't know. Yep, that's right. All right, well, I'm going to give the listeners a clue. You know this song. It is super iconic.
I hope they know it if it's the most streamed song.
Yeah, but there's a lot to pick from. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And recently, it was the subject of a movie.
Oh.
And if you didn't see the movie, I'm going to tell you something about this song. This song...
Oh, it's R. Kelly.
Yeah, the most streamed, yes.
Oh.
I see what you did there.
Yikes.
I actually like that one.
Yeah, right?
You did a pretty good job.
Thank you. Trapped in a closet.
Yeah. I can't only...
With my colostomy bag.
I only have a fire hose to get out.
You.
Oh.
If you didn't see this movie, this song was rejected so badly by the record company. There was a giant fight about this song.
Galileo, Galileo.
There you go, buddy. That's the one. Bohemian Rhapsody, the most streamed song of the 20th century with 1.6 billion streams. And that's according to Queen's label. And I don't know if the movie has played a part in this. I imagine it must have, because a lot of us love the movie. And why wouldn't you want to go and listen to the song since it was a big part of the movie? And I wanted to listen to so many Queen tunes. I can't believe I did not like Queen till I saw the movie, heard the music, and realized, oh, I guess I like this band better than I thought.
So will you go see them at the Tacoma Dome when they come to town? They're coming with... Adam Lambert's going to be singing with them again.
Yeah. Yeah, here's the problem.
What's that?
I fell in love with Freddie Mercury and Molly Romick's portrayal. That's the thing that really got me.
So you'd rather have Molly Romick tour with Queen?
I really would. Yeah, I really would.
I saw somebody, and I can't really... It made me laugh because I was like, you are so beyond stupid. You don't even deserve to have internet access.
Why are you looking at me when you say that? Okay.
They were going on a... bitch fest about the fact that Adam Lambert is fronting Queen because of the fact that Adam Lambert is flamboyant and is a homosexual.
That's why they're saying he's fronting Queen?
And it was like one of those things where I was like, I just had to unfriend the person because I was, and I don't typically do that, but I was just like, I don't even know how this person was my friend. It was like someone who I must have accepted as a friend because they were like mutual friends with other people, but they were just bitching about it. And it was just like, you realize Freddie Mercury is exactly what Adam Lambert is now.
Yeah.
There's really not much of a difference. I mean, as far as when it comes to just how over the top both of them are with how they are and how they act, you know?
Oh, the movie really goes to show you the way he dressed, everything he did.
Right.
I mean the rest of the band looks like your regular style rock and roll band, but Freddie Mercury changed so many trends and really opened so many doors with just how unapologetically he said, I'm going to go out. He was a showman. He was a performer. And he dressed in some amazing outfits. And that was the big part of the movie is how this guy was all about fashion.
That's what made Queen so cool is the fact that there was Freddie Mercury was just such an insane front man. And I think Adam Lambert does a phenomenal job. If you look online and watch any of these videos of him fronting Queen, it's pretty damn good. Whether or not you like Adam Lambert as a solo artist, I get that. Like, maybe his music's not for you. But he is the perfect guy to keep the Queen legacy going.
Yeah, and why not? I mean, thank God that you got a guy that you can say, hey, you know what this guy does? He does the band justice with his performance.
His voice is on point.
So his complaint was is that...
I don't know. He lives in a weird world where he thought that maybe Freddie Mercury wasn't the front man of Queen. Like, that made no sense to me. It was just somebody just being, I think, really just a closed-minded moron.
Yeah.
And
I'm just, I really am tired of gender and sexual orientation being brought up with anything that really it has no bearing upon the performance you're watching. I don't care. I really just go, you know what? Can we just watch something, see something, hear something, and like it? And let's just forget gender and sexual orientation. Why does it matter? It doesn't.
It shouldn't.
Yeah.
It really should.
Gosh, it's 2018. What kind of idiot? Yeah. First of all, you're right. What kind of idiot who has access to technology is still complaining about these things? Like, you shouldn't even be allowed to have technology if you're that kind of idiot.
Yeah, my new thing is whenever, say, especially when someone's an adult, my new feeling is you're an adult and you're trolling. It's really, truly, you're the saddest individual that I ever met.
Oh, I like that.
I mean, if you're an adult and you're being a troll at this point, come on, man.
Yeah.
Find something new to do. Find a new hobby.
You're absolutely right, dude.
Like, putting a plane in a bottle or something. I don't know.
Putting a plane in a bottle
instead of a ship?
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, yeah. A plane in a bottle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Steve's come up with something new.
Yeah, just go do something.
I bet I can go online and find put a plane in a bottle.
Yeah.
All right, let's find planes in bottles. Let's see if they exist.
I'm buying them all for you for Christmas.
Thanks, buddy.
Jackheads.
Bohemian Rhapsody entered the Hot 100 three separate times. It peaked at number 9 when it was released in the U.S. back in 1975. It went up to number 2 in 1992 thanks to Wayne's World.
Oh, yes.
And by the way, people were giving Mike Myers a hard time for his portrayal in the movie. My wife didn't even recognize him.
I heard he was awesome in this movie.
I know.
I still need to see the movie.
There was a critic that just lambasted Michael Myers. And it was, I got to stop reading the Daily Beast. The Daily Beast is ruining my life, and I used to love that site. But they just want to hate everything. That whole website seems to want to hate everything. And it used to be a cool site. Dear Daily Beast, stop hating. Yeah,
BJ, no.
Yeah, Mike Myers was awesome in that movie. So it came back because of the movie. So I'm talking 75, 92, and here it came back at number 33.
Wow.
Because of the fact of the Freddie Mercury movie. They were inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. I should say the song was back in 04. And Queen guitarist Brian May says, quote, "So the river of rock music has metamorphosized into streams. Very happy that our music is still flowing to the max." Ooh, how deep was that?
It is funny, though. A lot of people, right now the trend for any musical artist that's on Spotify is to post that screenshot of how many streams you've received this year and how many new fans and how many hours people are listening to your music. But then people are now making jokes to that saying, yeah, how much money are you making off of those streams? And still, they got to figure that out. It's unfortunate for the artists. They make almost no money off of the streaming. I know it's gotten a little bit better, but for an up-and-coming artist that could get a million streams or a million listens of their song, that would have meant a lot of money back in the day when you had to actually buy the song. Nowadays, because of all the services, and I'm guilty of having a service as well. I mean, it's just the way that things are now, but I hope that they could figure out a way to really compensate the artists a little bit more. It's great exposure, but it's not putting any money in their pockets.
Really? So, you're making a fraction of a penny
on a stream.
I just assumed because of all the subscription-based stuff that they were getting some cash out of that.
They're getting something, but it's not like back in the day where if you sold a million albums that you were pretty much set for life. Nowadays, you have a million people listening to your music, it doesn't mean really much. It's exposure, and then you can make your money off of touring. That's the hope.
I don't know how I feel about these streaming services then. I mean...
It's a necessary evil for an artist, though.
Yeah. I mean, because I think of the folks that, for Netflix, I it's a subscription service, and I'm assuming that everybody that's making those movies and TV shows, either A, people are getting residuals, or B, the original people are getting paid for acting in those.
But think about those shows are on a way smaller level of content compared to how many bands are out there right now.
Yeah.
How many bands in Seattle alone that are out there, and you're putting out your record on an independent level, and maybe you're getting a few thousand people checking out your music or downloading your music from Apple Music or Spotify or whatever it may be, but you're not seeing money from it.
So what's the win, Steve? You're right. So the
exposure.
And then what does that exposure get you?
People come to see you perform live, buy your merchandise.
So that's what it is. It's the live performance and buy the merchandise.
These days it is, which is funny because back in the day, the live performances were done so that you could sell more records and make more money that way. The money was in the record sales. It's kind of flipped the script.
Wow. All right. Well, listen.
Hopefully they figure it out so they can be compensated better. But right now, streaming doesn't make artists much money at all. You could look online, like you could find like the most streamed songs really don't make an artist a lot of money.
I don't feel badly then. If the streaming services are more of a promotional tool for a lot of these artists, okay, because that makes sense. Because that's what we do in our business. Our business was always a promotional tool for artists. I don't have a problem with that at all. But I think at some point, though, damn, if you're getting streamed skillions of times and you're not making any money off of that, at some point, it's got to be like YouTube. You think at some point like YouTube, you'd start getting paid more if you were getting millions of streams.
Yeah, but even they've changed things where it's made it more difficult to get paid. Like you have to have X amount of subscribers to even be considered.
And what about that little kid that we played? Didn't he make a ton of money? That little Ryan kid?
Yeah, that's why they're changing it.
Yeah, Ryan's opening boxes of toys or whatever and the kid's making skillions.
What do you think the other songs that made this list of the most streamed songs?
Ooh,
of the century.
Of the 20th
I'm looking at the
century.
Article. Yeah, what do you think is number two?
Len, Steal My Sunshine.
I wish, Rev. That's the greatest song. That song makes me feel like it's summer even in the winter.
I know, it really
does.
Steal
My Sunshine.
Yeah.
That's not it, though.
It's a great song.
Danny?
It is a great song.
Welcome to Jungle, Guns N' Roses.
No, but actually, Guns N' Roses did do really well. Okay. Sweet Child of Mine,
I believe
is number three.
I imagine it had to be Sweet Child of Mine, because that guitar opening is just the greatest.
Number four, or up in the top five, is November Rain as well.
Oh, wow.
How about Don't Stop Believin'?
Oh, that's a great guess.
Oh, Vic.
No, but you're wrong.
Wow.
Think local.
Yes.
Oh.
It smells like Teen Spirit.
Oh, there you go, Danny.
Bing, that's
the winner.
You already had one guest, Danny.
Sorry.
God.
You're taking from me, Danny. Opportunity, you douche.
I just got so excited.
Such a jerk. How about Aha's Take on Me also did really well in this.
It's my dad's ringtone. I hear it all the time.
That's awesome. It showed up in a commercial recently, too, I think. So I'm trying to think. Any Bob Seger or anything like that?
I don't have that much of a list.
Oh, okay. I know. It's hard to come up with something you'd think would be like a song that's streamed the most.
Well, just think about all the songs that people always sing at karaoke.
Yeah. Ooh, oh, Sweet that's Caroline.
I bet that did pretty well as well.
Oh, definitely in Boston. Yeah.
Sorry, that's all I know about it.
Caroline.
Wow, that's a great rendition, Rev. Jeez. Sounds like the penguin from the old Batman show singing. All right. Oh, that's awesome.
Aha, do you remember when... I remember being excited going to see a movie because they were going to premiere... Or they were going to show Take On Me on the big screen. I don't know if it was even premiering it. I think at that point we already saw it on MTV, but it was such a cool thing that we got to watch Aha's Take On Me, that music video, before a movie played.
Yeah, I remember those days. That was a cool video.
Oh, it was a great video.
Yeah, it was a really, really cool video.
I was stoked when the Mopop, which was EMP at the time, they had like a whole thing about pop culture stuff, and they had like a clip or like a still frame of the Take On Me thing that you could take a picture with, and I thought that was pretty awesome.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
I'd do it.
Somebody says, I agree with you guys with Steve and also the Rev. Steal My Sunshine, the song of our generation.
Do
you remember
song.
Steal My Sunshine?
Yeah, it's a good song. Oh, yeah.
And I know it's used in a commercial right now. I don't know what for.
I don't have it on my iPod. I got to get it on my iPod. You're right. That just makes you feel good.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good, it's one of those, and it's, you know me, it's poppy sounding, so of course I'm going to love it.
The creepy brother and sister.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't do much after that.
No,
I had the record. Well, probably because they got arrested.
Is Cotton Eye Joe on that one?
No, we already went. All the ones I had is all the ones we had.
Well, it just reminded me of this list of songs that never fail to make white people beyond turned.
Where did you find that? While we were talking, you just looked that up?
Well, I already knew it existed.
But you don't Google search white people beyond turned on a daily?
What world is Vicky living when we're doing this show?
Don't worry about it.
It's just unbelievable, like where she's on that.
Another world.
It really is. It's like, you know, and this is what it is to have Vicky over for games conversations. She just randomly is always in her phone and she's kind of with you, and then all of a sudden here comes this thing that has kind of
come from Cotton Eye Joe.
Yeah.
In her defense, I really do like that song.
Do you guys remember, did you guys ever go to the T-Bird games back at the Key Arena days?
No.
The WHL hockey team that we have. I think they even happen a little. I think they still do it at the show where. But there was a time when I first moved out here, I would go to T-Bird games all the time. And there was a guy, whenever they would bust out Cotton Eye Joe, this guy was hammered, I think, at the point that it would happen. And then he became the Cotton Eye Joe guy. And at some point during the song, he would work the aisles, take his shirt off, start swinging his shirt and doing the Cotton Eye Joe dance. And then he would get kicked out of the game. And it was like every time he would, they never blacklisted him. I think it was part of the fun of it all. He would do his Cotton Eye Joe dance, he would take his shirt off, and then security would kick him out.
And did it bum you out when security would kick you out?
What?
Did it bum you out when security kicked you out each time?
Oh, I see what you're trying to do.
There goes Steve taking his shirt off.
No, don't do it, Steve. No, I didn't have moves like this guy.
Yeah,
I would have broke my ankle working those stairs.
Yeah. Hey, look, if the guy was trash but still could work the stairs and didn't fall down, good for him.
If he wasn't trash, he just was living life to the best.
Yeah.
He was turnt.
He was turnt. He was a white guy.
I kind of always wanted to be an iconic guy at a stadium. Mm. You know, like the Cleveland's got that guy that plays the drum all the time up there, and he's always there, boom, boom. I want to be like a guy like that. My wife's cousin used to be the trumpet guy at Fenway Park. He was always known for playing Take Me Out to the Ball Game and accompanying them on a trumpet back before they started doing
some of those fans get a little full of themselves, I think, sometimes too. Like, they kind of take themselves too seriously. I remember it was like the guy that was, I think it was Rangers games, he was known as the Chief, and he was wearing a headdress and all this. And I remember being excited to see him, and he just kind of blew me off like Billy Joel did back in the day.
Everybody blows you off. What does that say about you?
And the Devils had a guy, and it was kind of cool. He was the devil speller. I don't know what his nickname was, but he would just yell D, and then people would say, D, give me an E, and what's the spell devils, and let's go devils. That was his thing.
And that was his thing.
And every game, he would do it. And we went to the game when we went home for Thanksgiving break, and somebody still does it. I don't know if it's still him or if the tradition just continues.
Well, if he passed it down.
Then there was also at the Ranger games, I always loved the one guy who was like or it could be anyone, it was the whistle guy, and he would have this certain whistle, and it would end, it would cue everybody to yell Pop Vin Sucks, who was a player from the New York Islanders.
Oh, nice.
It didn't even matter if they were playing the Islanders. He would just do it, and people would yell Pot Vin Sucks at the end. It was hilarious.
Well, that's why I love Big Low. It was so good to see him. You know, saw him last night. They still put him on TV with his defense.
I was pretty stoked to see that because he's been battling some health issues, and unfortunately had to miss the last home game, which was the first time he's missed a game in decades.
Oh, I didn't know he was battling health issues.
Yeah, he's got some eye issues, man. I just hope for nothing but the best for him. I know he's recently had some surgery, and it was really, I was really stoked to see him out there. And to the point where even like Russell Wilson sent out a tweet wishing him the best, which I thought, that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
That the quarterback of your team acknowledged and gave you some love and support.
Yeah, well, and Russell is a guy that does his homework, and he knows how much of a fan Big Low is. I still have his action figure, you know, so seeing him out there with his C-fence last night, I'm glad. I didn't know he was having health issues, so it was good seeing him out there. That guy is dedicated.
Oh, he's the best.
Oh, man.
He's a good dude.
He's probably going to be so stoked for hockey, too. Gives him another place to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big Low, just to point out how big of a sports fan is, when the Donkeys were having regular games, you know, in the men's league that we were in, he was coming to all the games.
I remember that.
I mean, he'd bring his whole crew, James and the rest of the guys, Roy.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
He's a good dude. Much love to Big Low, man. I'm glad that he's good enough to be at the game last night. Well, he's coming to the Moore Theater next month. You know we love having this guy on. How about that? By the way, my buddy Larry in Atlanta says that two of his favorite guys, me and Bert Kreischer. How about that? He tweeted that out. That's good old Larry, my buddy. He was very happy that we're both going to be in the same place because Bert's going to be on our show at 8:17 this morning. On The Rock.
BJ and Migs. Mornings on The Rock. 99.9
KISW, The Rock of Seattle.
BJ, I always love it when we have our next guest on. He's absolutely one of our favorites, and he's bringing his Body Shots World Tour here to Seattle next month at the Moore Theater. Please welcome to the show, Bert Kreischer.
Bert, welcome back, buddy.
What's up, guys?
There he is. God bless America. It just wouldn't be the holiday season without you gracing the old airwaves.
I know. I wish I could be there in person, have a few cocktails.
Yeah. That's right. Didn't we have the moonshine the last time you came in?
Yeah.
Dude, we murdered that moonshine. And by we, I mean the poetic we.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that the show that we ended up later on at the parlor and we did that drunk podcast with you?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah, those things, every time I get to Seattle, things kind of spin away from me.
Yeah.
And it all ends up into one night where I'm talking to Danny Bonaducci at a bar at the top of my lungs.
That's when you know you've reached the pinnacle of your career right there, my friend.
Trading hats with some professional football player.
Yeah, there you go. So, let's get the business going. First of all, Bert Kreischer, Body Shots World Tour, performing at the Moore Theater Friday, January 11th. Two shows, 7 to 9:30 p.m. You know, man, if you haven't seen Bert live, you need to make that happen. And, of course, if you have seen Bert live, you know you need to make it happen again. STGpresents.org. Get those tickets. And that's at Bert Kreischer again. Moore Theater, Friday, January 11th, 7 and 9:30 p.m. All right, we got the business out of the way. Bert, I'm just so surprised you remember anything. Not because... you're drinking your brains out. But dude, you know, when you fill your head with so many life experiences, your brain can only hold so much, and eventually stuff is just going to go away. And you know, you got people come up to you going, "You remember we did this?" I could see how you'd forget because you've done so much.
No, it's but it's I'm almost like a first stage Alzheimer's patient where I'm like, "Wait, I know you. You're my nephew, right?" And they're like, "Yeah, there you go, Grandma." Yeah, like I can trigger remember stuff. It's so funny. I'm really bad at stories. Like when people come up to me and they're like, "Do you remember the time you did dot dot dot?" And I'm always like, and then it looks like a lie because I don't remember what it was. I'm like, I don't really remember that. I've done a lot of stuff. You talking about goat's blood with a Tanzanian chief? I think I remember that.
That's the thing, man. You've done some bizarre and wild stuff. I mean, you're taking people on trips, getting yourself your butt kicked on shows. I mean, just so many different things you've tried to conquer. I don't know how you keep it together. I am surprised that you even remember that Seattle is a city.
Dude, can I tell you what's crazy? Is like you go to a dinner party and someone will say, "Oh, I'm going to Africa," and I'll be like, "Yeah, here's the thing with Africa. If you go into those little shanty towns, stay away from the brown. You have a," and they're like, "What?" I'm insufferable at a dinner party. The second anyone brings up any cool experience they've done, as pedestrian as it may be, I have something that's like 9 times bigger. "Oh yeah, I jumped off the world's tallest stadium in Africa. I had one day in Africa, I'm not even joking, where I swam with great white sharks, rappelled off Table Mountain, and jumped off the world's tallest stadium."
Yeah.
Literally within 12 hours.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. There's no way that anyone's going to be able to have anything that's happened in their life be better than what you have if you're at the same table.
Oh, and then you have, like, you know, you're blessed enough to have friends that, like, you know, like Rogan or Segura or Ari or Bill Burr, and you're friends with the funniest person in the world. Like, and my buddy said dot dot dot, and they're like, "That's the funniest thing I've ever heard." You're like, "Oh, I meant to mention my buddy's Bill Burr," you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, it is.
So do you find yourself?
And then you get me drinking, and I want to tell stories, and that's when things get out of control.
Oh, that's the best time.
I was going to ask you: do you find yourself at times like trying to like bite your lip because you're like, "Oh, I just don't want to be that guy that's going to one up these stories," but I definitely have a great story that would one up this story.
No, I find myself being the guy like, "I can't wait till this boring person's done with their story so I can dazzle the room."
That's it.
I can bring out the razzle dazzle, the thunder and fire, and show them what the Lord feels like.
That's the thing, man. If
that's the spirit.
If somebody doesn't know you, Bert, and they are in a social gathering with you, and then for some reason they thought, "Oh, I'm going to be the guy that's going to really just put wonder in everybody's eyes," they have no idea. Someone should just pull aside.
I've actually done. This is horrific, but I'll tell someone who tells a really boring story at a dinner party. I'll go, "Can I tell you your story?" And they're like, "What?" I go, "I know that's a cool experience, and I'm sure you're going to want to share it again. Can I tell you how to tell it?" And
they're like, "No,
what do you mean?" And I will tell people their stories that they just told a room back and make it amazing.
Bert, that's a great public service. It really is. We've all been there where it's like, "Dude, you need to work on your story game, please."
Oh, yeah. I'm like, "Yo, start with, if you ever wonder how I got this scar, start there." And everyone's like, "Whoa," as opposed to closing on it. We all saw the scar. Bring us in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to lead with a great headline. You know, clickbait us at least. Do something.
The first time I ever did that was with Segura. Segura and I were in the car. We were just kind of just BSing about nothing. And he told me this really great story, but he, you know, Tommy is, when Tommy first started, he was definitely just like a straight up set up punch guy. And he told me the story, I go, "That's maybe one of the best stories I've ever heard." And he's like, "Really?" I go, "Yeah, but it's better if it ends like this." And he was like, "But it didn't end like that." And I go, "Yeah, but it's better if it did, isn't it?" And then one day he calls me up. He's like, "Can I do that on stage?" I go, "Of course. That's the only reason we were talking about it."
You know, Bert, it's interesting, man, because you're right. There's a, you know, you can't let the facts get in the way of telling a great story, which a lot of people do.
Oh, my goal is like, this is when I tell a story, here's my tenements, my constitution. Important facts have to be accurate. If you stretch important facts, what happens, number one, is the story becomes unbelievable.
Yeah.
You've got to hold on to the important facts. You can always withhold information to heighten experiences, but you can add some things to give it a little hint, a little musk, you know. But you've got to keep the tenets of the story correct. And then number one, every story needs to start out super big. It needs to draw you in the, when you start telling it. And this is the biggest mistake everyone that tells a story does. You got to have an end. You got, people have to know the story's over. If you don't have an end, it just kind of meanders, you know?
And so with everything going on in your life, Bert, and I, this might be a challenge, I don't know, but I don't think so, because I just know you, everything that happens to you, I know you, the way your brain is and the way you lead your life, the most pedestrian experience, I think you can find it, make it so grandiose. So I'm, and we're talking to Bert Kreischer, Moore Theater, Friday, January 11th, 7 and 9:30 p.m., stgpresents.org, get your tickets. So Bert, what is for you, what is your favorite pedestrian, domestic, non-exciting thing that's ever happened to you? Because you've got the family, you got the kids. We know, I mean, Africa and all that cool stuff. But what is your favorite, like, you go, this is a great story, and it had nothing to do with anything about me being me famous or getting to go to world places. What's your favorite domestic lame story that you got?
Right. Without a doubt. I mean, it's, I think usually it's anything with my daughter, Isla.
Yeah.
There's a story I'm telling right now that is my favorite story that's ever happened to me in my entire life. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I can't tell it on the air because it wouldn't make sense and it would be a little dirty. I'm going to tell it at the show.
Oh.
Suffice to say, it's about going to Starbucks. It's just about going to Starbucks. And the thing that's, I'll break it down why I love this story, is that at the time I was obsessed with Norm Macdonald. And like his ability to take an old joke, like an old joke format, and tell it in a new way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like guy walks into a bar. That, like, Stanhope and I had been talking on the phone, and we were, and he was saying, I want to rewrite Knock Knock jokes. Like, I'm a great comedian. I'm one of the best. No, he wasn't saying I'm one of the best. But he's like, I'm a great comedian.
Yeah.
Why can't I write Knock Knock jokes? Why are all the great Knock Knock jokes already written? I want to write some Knock Knock jokes, my own original Knock Knock jokes. And I got obsessed with that, and I listened to Norm, and Norm had done that. Norm had taken the traditional format of my neighbor walked up, guy goes into the doctor. He had done that. And I had an experience at Starbucks that all of a sudden, like, I went in and something happened, and then I went in the next day, and the same thing happened. And I immediately was like, oh my God, this is guy walks into a bar.
Yeah.
And then the third day I walked in, and I was like, here's where I bring the thunder. And it is the best story. I'm telling you when I say this, it is the most perfectly crafted, best story I've ever been a part of in my entire life. I say been a part of because I didn't really write it because it happened to me, you know? But it's, oh my God, it's like, I cannot wait. I cannot wait to tell it in Seattle.
See, that, you know, that is the secret of life. I mean, Bert, obviously you've had some great experiences, but I think it's just the way you approach life that any experience can be a great adventure if you've just got that kind of mindset.
Dude, I'll tell you right now, me and my family, we're doing the 12 nights of Christmas with three of our other families. And so we're partying 12 nights this December.
Damn.
Where we get together and we celebrate one thing. And then that wasn't enough for us, so we took it up to the next level. And now the four couples are doing the 12 nights of Kama Sutra. And so we're each texting each other a Kama Sutra pose.
What?
And then we're all experimenting with it and then sending in our notes.
Whoa, wait.
So which ones have you had to do yet?
What the?
We've only done one. It's the wheelbarrow one where the woman's on her back and her feet are over your shoulder. Dude, let me tell you something. Life, okay, one day I had this epiphany.
This is insane.
I'm sitting with my wife. We're having people over. And I said, our house was horrible at the time. And I said, hey, why don't we get one of those huge, like, three-story slides for our front yard? And my wife's like, oh, why would we do that? It's going to be so expensive. There's probably hard to get. I go, just call and see how much it was. She called and she's like, the look on her face was a game changer. She goes, it's $100. I go, oh my God, we're getting one. We're definitely getting one. And every kid in the neighborhood was just coming down to our house and getting on this slide. And I looked at life and I was like, every night can be a party. You can do something fun every night. So we're doing the 12 nights of Christmas. We're doing the gingerbread house. We're doing a movie marathon of all the Christmas. And it's all the families getting together and celebrating Christmas 12 times instead of once.
Wow.
I'm telling you,
everybody can do this, Bert, because everyone's getting, you know, people got jobs, they got responsibilities, but they can still do this for the 12 nights of Christmas. That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's like, look at, I mean, even take partying out of it, right? Look at Sober October. I tell Joe and Tom and Ari how much I drink. They're shocked. Like, wow, that's a lot. And we turn what could be a really uncomfortable, negative situation into Sober October, where four friends get together, don't drink, don't do drugs, compete physically with each other. I mean, it's just like, it's like everything can be fun. Everything doesn't have to be like, you know, you don't have to look at everything like, oh, got to go home and see the family. Turn it into a fun thing. That's what I mean. That's what I look at.
Well,
things,
and that, look, that's your. I mean, look, that's your life. I mean, we're talking to Bert Kreischer, and yeah, that is totally your life. He's got the Body Shots World Tour, Moore Theater, Friday, January 11th, 7 and 9:30 p.m. shows. STGPresents.org. You want to get tickets?
How'd the wheelbarrow thing go? Was it a success for you guys? Or
oh yeah, I cannot wait till the next pose. Oh.
What's the next one,
dude? I don't know. We have it. We're on the night of Christmas that we celebrate. We all get together and find a pose that we all think would be. It was funny how quick other couples wrote in, and they were like, "All right, done with number two. Done with number one. Next one."
That's a hell. You know, when you think about it, Bert, though, again, that's a hell of a friendship where you can have these. First of all, this entire challenge, the 12 poses of the Kama Sutra or whatever, and also that you've got friends where it doesn't get awkward and crazy because you're basically talking about sex.
Yeah, you know what, though? It's like, I think it's almost like an extended family. Like, we're all so close, and all our kids are so close that it was so cool, too, because, like, you know, my wife's not always trying to have sex with me at all, like, ever. She's in the other room, so I'm keeping my voice low because I don't want to screw it up.
Right.
She came home with a little bit of a buzz. She was like, all right, are we going to try that pose? And I'm like, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It was one, dude, but it was a good one. I'll tell you what, those Kama Sutra guys knew what they were talking about. You get stuck in a rut so much, like doing the exact same moves, because that's what you're used to, that you don't think, oh, what if I shake it up? And then if you're a moron like me, when you think of shaking it up, you're like, do you want me to tie you up and put on a leather zipper mask? And she's like, what? And you're like, oh, you know, you can just move positions.
There is that. And so Steve pulled up the Kama Sutra wheelbarrow pose, and we saw that on the she's got to have good arm strength. She's got to have good forearm strength in order to do her part. And you also, I mean, usually for us guys, you know, there's always something there to help us in the task. But I think you've just got to do a lot of work physically. Is that if I'm getting the right pose?
Well, I've been going to a lot of spin classes, if that's what you're asking.
Very good. Yeah, good job. So you're good. You're good with the bike.
I'm looking for a pose. If you see one on there, let me know. One where I can put my beer on her back.
Oh, there you go.
The Kama Sutra might have been your best choice for that. I mean, the wheelbarrow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's fantastic. That, you know, Bert, I mean, there's that zest for life, man. I don't know. I don't know how you get to keep it. I mean, because, you know, it's like the kid never grew up, and everything that you've done, everything you've been through, and you still, every time we talk to you, it's like you've never lost that. I don't know what you have. I don't know how it is, but it is surely awesome, dude. It really, really is.
Yeah, I feel very, trust me, it's not lost on me. I feel very blessed to literally be sitting around my house, and my only job is to try to come up with a joke that I can try out tonight when I go to a club and smoke weed and drink with my friends. Like, if there's anyone thinking about getting into comedy, it is a forgiveless job for the first 20 years. But if you are lucky enough to have a career out of it, it is the greatest thing you could ever imagine. I love it. Dude, I love just sitting there. I was in a meeting yesterday, and I started giggling to myself about a joke that I just thought, what if they made different eras of women at strip clubs where they're like, put your hands together for Martha from the 1800s. Her colony thinks she's a witch, and you're about to find out why. And I just started giggling, and someone's like, what's so funny? And I was like, I don't know, but it's just what I do.
I like that joke, actually. That's
it doesn't work well. I'll tell you the joke.
Oh, damn it. All right, well, you know, just do it for me, Bert, then. Just know that that's our joke.
I have a hard time with jokes because they don't fit in my act right, you know? So I gotta, if I write a joke, then I've got to find a way to slide it in. Like, on the DL.
Yeah, exactly. I know what you mean. Well, you know what, Bert, man, it's always awesome to talk to you. And again, if you got to see Bert, if you haven't seen him live, you have to. You really do. One of the greatest storytellers of our generation. The Body Shots World Tour, Moore Theater, Friday, January 11th, 7 and 9:30 p.m. STGpresents.org for tickets. I'm sure we'll be talking to you as we get closer to that date too, Bert. It's always great having you on, man.
And it looks like number six.
Definitely. I'll call in again, but more importantly, I think I'm in Portland the night before, so I might be able to come in studio that Friday morning.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
I would love that. By the way, I'll have my tour bus with me. Oh. My face will be on the side. Really? This will be my second date on this tour, so I'll still have like my fresh smile on, as opposed to Orlando, who's going to see me at my last.
Oh, I like the tour bus lifestyle. That's pretty awesome. I didn't know you were doing that.
That's the greatest thing I've ever decided to do in my entire life. My wife, we started looking at the tour. We did all that. We announced all the dates, and they all just sold out so quickly that they're like, let's do second shows. But when you do a second show, you're not getting out of the venue until like midnight sometimes. So they were like, well, it'd be too late for you to fly. What if we just get a tour bus?
Wow.
And then you just drive to all the things. And I was like, And then literally the guilty pleasure I did was I decided to rent it for the whole tour so I can fly in. Tell me if this isn't going to be great. I fly into Portland with all my stuff. I pack my tour bus, and then every date thereafter, I fly in and out in the same sweatsuit. I don't bring or leave or bring anything with me on the plane. Everything's in my tour bus.
That is so awesome.
Dude, I cannot wait. We used to do these things called one-suit weekends, me and Ari, where you put on one suit and fly somewhere, party for 2 days, and fly back in the same one suit.
Yes.
Dude.
Oh, I just want to travel the country that way, Bert. I don't even want to have to work shows.
It is amazing. You literally feel like a CIA operative. You feel like Don Draper. You just get on a plane with nothing.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, you don't have a bag or anything? You're like, nope. Blood pressure is in my pocket. Blood pressure medicine in my pocket.
That's all you need. Bert Kreischer, Body Shots World Tour. Again, Moore Theater, 11th of January, 7 to 9:30 p.m. shows, stgpresents.org for tickets. Bert, thanks so much for being with us, buddy. We appreciate it.
Dude, I love you guys. I will see you Friday, January 11th.
Nice. That's awesome. How cool is that? Tour bus living. I love that. Yesterday, Steve, he did get this one right.
In the 12 days of Christmas, what was given on the third day?
Three French men.
No.
French hens.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a French man would have been good too, Steve. I mean, that's French. I think somebody wants that for Christmas. Come on. You want a shot at beating Steve? You got it. 206-449-1181. That's 206-449-1181. We're playing Beat Migs at 847 on The Rock.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Travis Gagne, bankruptcy attorney. He's here right now and has agreed to answer more of your questions about bankruptcy. Here's another question from a listener. I'm getting my wages garnished. Can bankruptcy help with that?
Absolutely. One of the big reasons people file bankruptcy is because they have a judgment or a lawsuit against them, or their wages are getting garnished, and so they can't pay their other regular ongoing bills. People sometimes think that you can't file bankruptcy once they have a judgment against them or once a garnishment has started, and that's not true. Filing bankruptcy will immediately stop any garnishment that you have going, except for child support, and stop your creditors from continuing on with garnishments of your bank accounts, your wages, and in most cases will discharge that liability through the bankruptcy process. And we can file a bankruptcy case for you usually the day you come in.
Thanks, Travis. If you have more questions about bankruptcy, you can reach out to Travis anytime at ChooseTheRightChapter.com. That's ChooseTheRightChapter.com. Thanks for listening.